Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a sold-out show at the City Winery this Friday. If you have tickets or you're on the wait list, you're one of the lucky ones to see Isaac Mizrahi. Mizrahi's doing a cabaret show called Does This Song Make Me Look Fat? For many, the name Isaac Mizrahi doesn't register when thinking of jazz standards and storytelling. No, we think fashion. The fashion icon and television star has been front and center for years, either wowing us with his collection on the runways of New York or the aisles of your local Target, or on his own cable talk shows or covering celebrities on E! This show is not the first time Mizrahi's taken his talents to the stage. He did a one-man show off-Broadway a few years back, but the show that's coming to Chicago is definitely a new direction and one that he just finished up a sold-out run at Cafe Carlyle on the Upper East Side of New York City. The multi-talented Isaac Mizrahi joins me now on The Download. Mr. Mizrahi, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Hi, thrilled to do it. Thrilled to be here.
I've always been a fan of yours, and I love the television stuff that you've done and also the fashion. Talk about the cabaret side. Where does this idea of getting up on stage and singing and telling stories come from?
Well, I think it's a funny thing, and I don't blame people for thinking of me as a fashion figure who's been mostly known as a fashion designer, but my whole creative life started more as a performer. You know, when I was a kid, a tiny kid, like 10 years old, I started doing these female impersonations for, you know, anybody who would listen. And I kind of used to draw these crowds doing Streisand and Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli. And, you know, like, you would never expect that. And, you know, I'll tell you what, like in 1971, right, it wasn't exactly the easiest thing to explain to one's parents right. or one's family. So it wasn't exactly the greatest gift at the time, you know, but it was what I loved doing. And I made puppet shows and I made puppets. And that's how I actually learned to sew, making puppets. But then I went to high school performing arts when I was 13. And I was an actor, you know, and I learned how to do all that stuff. I took lessons and music lessons and piano lessons and dancing lessons. And I transitioned into fashion when I was right after I left high school. I went to Parsons. In high school, I kind of picked up this kind of like fashion fever, you know, and it's something that I really love, you know, and I've done it, I think, very kind of seriously for the past 30 years on different levels.
Yeah, right.
And now it seems like this part of my life, this return to the stage, return to performing and writing material, is very interesting. You know, it's really interesting. It's kind of what I want to spend my time doing, you know.
When you were on top of the world in fashion and doing things where you're introducing us to new clothing and clothing lines, did you always know you were going to return to this part of your life? Always know that once you got past the fashion, that cabaret and creative arts would be calling you back?
You know, I did the fashion part of it. I think I kind of like followed that part of it because it did seem like it would be easier for me to kind of work steadily, you know? Mm-hmm. And I didn't have an unhappy childhood, but it was a childhood that was like kind of religious, and I was sent to yeshiva, and it wasn't very interesting, you know? And so, like, at a young age, I kind of knew that I had to get out at all costs, right? So it seemed like fashion was going to be an easier way for me to kind of make a living and get out and get an apartment and, you know, get a life. And I was right about that, you know? I went to Parsons at the age of, you know, 17 or whatever it is you start college, which is basically a trade school. You know, I mean, not only are you learning how to do all that stuff, but also you're kind of like you're inducted, if you will, right into the fashion business. I mean, you know, we had like Calvin Klein as a critic and Donna Karan as a critic and, you know, those designers. And I immediately got a job when I was a junior at Perry Ellis. I got a job. Wow. And it was a great job. It was the job that everybody wanted. And I got it as a junior, you know. And so it was like there was this crazy like impetus. It just moved me right along, you know. But always I knew what my heart was about. I knew it. And I think my best work in fashion is a kind of melding of those things, you know, like knowing how to make clothes, understanding what inventive clothes are, but also like the idea of making them somehow, you know, theatrical.
Yeah.
And, you know, very, very interesting, almost like fiction, you know, it's almost like writing a story doing a collection.
Yeah,
me,
that's so interesting.
And so like, I never felt like I went away from it is what I have.
Yeah,
to.
I mean,
I never really felt that way.
It's an expressive art form to make clothing,
yes,
clothing
it is.
Lines of fashion, but also it is performance. Even if you're not the one walking up and down the runway wearing the clothes, there is a performance element, a creative element to being a fashion designer.
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you make like 4 huge fashion shows a year that are supposed to be like dramatic spectacles. And I'll tell you, like, when I started, they weren't so dramatic. They weren't these big, giant spectacles. I mean, some were, but I kind of took it to this place. I was part of a bunch of people who made fashion shows more about a kind of theatrical happening than people were used to. You know, like in the old days, you went and you saw the clothes and you sat there and you liked them or you didn't like them, and that was it. And in my, you know, when we came about, we sort of made these giant shows. You know, like I used to have thousands of people at my shows, and it was very exciting. And eventually, right, like, I gotta say this, and I hope I'm not going to, you know, piss anybody off, but, like, I will say that there's a certain thing about high fashion that becomes kind of, like, exclusionary, do you know?
Yeah.
And though I'm very good at making up beautiful, expensive clothes, very precious, precious, new-looking things, you know, it only speaks to a very small bunch of people who can afford it, who can fit into it, you know, and eventually that loses interest to me. Do you know, like, if anything, that whole service idea about like trying to democratize it, trying to like, you know, make it available to everyone, I became a little bored with the kind of exclusive thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so like most young designers, I went out of business and I was so kind of happy about it. You know, I hate to say that because that does sound a little crazy, but it was really good for me, you know? And when I came back, I started making couture clothes again, but I also did that collection for Target for, I don't know, 7 years or
yeah,
something like
right.
that. And that was, I thought, the best thing I ever did, you know, because it wasn't seen by 4 very skinny, rich women, you know. It was seen by every single woman across the country and men. We did men's clothes, you know. We did pets things. It was such a great thing. We did housewares. It was all great.
It's funny because there's so many different, even celebrities now, I see with artists and musicians who want to get into the world of high fashion. They want to do everything they can to get to the exclusive part, the high-end fashion area. You rarely hear anyone say, I want to get into fashion to bring the clothes to the masses, to be able to be in
yeah.
aisles at Target. To hear you, Isaac Mizrahi, talking about that, it almost flies in the face of what we know about fashion design.
I know. I'm so sorry. It's just what I feel. You know, it's what I feel. And a lot of times when I see those beautiful things that people make, you know, I long to make those things again. I really do. Don't get me wrong. But a lot of times, and I'm going to say this, I really mean this, a lot of times those clothes are terrible and they're very pretentious. And the only thing that sets them apart from the clothes at Target are the fact that they're really expensive, you know. Just because clothes are expensive doesn't make them good. As a matter of fact, I think most expensive clothes are dreadful. You know, I really mean that.
Yeah.
I do. Some are exquisite. I mean, like, some are so beautiful your eyes fall out, you know, and so new and so fresh and so exciting and worthy of all of the fanfare. But when you consider how many people have fashion shows a season, you totally understand the fatigue that, like, editors and buyers feel, because there's just so much terrible stuff out there. I mean it. And I say that because I love the subject so much. Do you
yeah.
see? Not saying it's because I'm hypercritical. I'm saying it because it's one of my favorite things, beautiful new clothes, you know?
Yeah.
So I know I sound like I'm full of contradictions, but life is, right?
No, I love it. I think that fatigue you just mentioned, whether it be designers or buyers, can it also cross over to consumers in the way that they may say, okay, I'm paying all this money for this object and I like it, but there's so much that's coming at me and so many different stores are trying to get my attention. And now I can go online from my couch and flip up my, you know, look on my phone and be able to press buy. Is there going to be a shift in the fashion industry that takes into consideration the consumer habits and the fatigue of consumers when it comes to buying clothes?
Well, I think it's happening. I think, you know, it's been happening. It is happening, right? Like, I think that shopping is a completely, completely different concern than it was 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, right? It doesn't occur in the same way. Like you said, people are at home scrolling on their computers, right? Looking at stuff, ordering stuff, right? that's what's become more fun than going places and standing in those rooms and trying clothes on, right? I mean, you know, there are certain principles about it that never change, right? Like, beautiful fabric is beautiful fabric. Someone who knows how to cut a dress or cut a pair of trousers or do that is going to always do a good job. You know, they're going to do a good job, right? And there have always been terrible, pretentious clothes, you know, and there have always been fabulous, innovative new clothes. And, like, the good designers, I think, have their ears to the ground about these newfound habits of the consumer, you know. They're ready. They're more ready than you'd expect, you know what I mean? And they're already on it. I mean, you know, there's nothing as perceptive as a merchant, right? A merchant perceives what the consumers want.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. I love it. Last question here before we wrap up, and it has to do with your cabaret show and style. Because I was thinking about the cabaret show is one that has been a part of the human experience for decades, for centuries, this idea of jazz standards. And I think about it in parallels with fashion, this idea that everything is cyclical, that trends come back and styles come back. For you to be on stage doing jazz standards like Cole Porter or telling stories in a much more traditional style of theater than what we might see in the new age of theater, there are parallels to the idea that everything that's old becomes new again.
Yes, I agree. But I'll tell you what, I got a review for this show in the New York Times. It was probably like the best review I've ever gotten, right? And the wonderful critic referred to it as alt cabaret, and I'm not exactly sure what that means, except I think he's right. You know, it isn't the same old cabaret. It's a new kind of like expressive form that comes from its roots. You know, there is definitely a big part of it that is about cabaret. And like growing up in New York, being around all of these wonderful cabaret performers, being one myself for a number of years, like, I don't know if you know this, but like for years, for 20 some years, I've been doing gigs in New York, you know, different clubs and, you know, kind of secretly under the wire and not so secretly under, you know, trying to get people to show up at Joe's Pub, you know, or wherever it was I was performing for years, right? But what I will say is that, like, consider my best friend for 10 years was Sandra Bernhard. You know, she's a great cabaret performer. My idol was Eartha Kitt and Elaine Stritch and Bobby Short. I mean, I idolized those people, and I went regularly to see them. And what they did was so superb and classic, you know. And what I'm doing, I'm trying to be superb and classic myself, you know. In the process, some of it is coming out, like, very wacky, you know. And by the way, if you're listening to this and you're coming to the show, you know, you're going to see that it's a very louche kind of a show. Like, there are no holds barred. I mean, like, I talk about a lot of things that you might not expect me, this very gentlemanly fashion designer, to be talking about, you know, like drugs and sex, and you'll see, you know. So where it is, yes, classical cabaret, hoping that it's being pulled in this direction now, you know, this new direction.
Well, leave it up to Isaac Mizrahi to bring something new to the world of cabaret. The show is called Does This Song Make Me Look Fat? It's at the City Winery this Friday night. It's sold out, but there is a wait list, so go check it out. Isaac Mizrahi, I can't thank you enough for taking some time out to talk to us now. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm thrilled. Thank you.